Hello, and welcome to another episode of my podcast, Stepping Up. My name is Sue Reed, and every week I provide a platform for people to tell their story of how they have faced and overcome a challenge in their life. Here is today's story. My guest today is Karen. Now, Karen Savage is a sport and exercise scientist with over 30 years' experience in the mind and fitness industry. She's also got a firm grounding in a number of therapies, and that's what makes her story today of experiencing narcissistic abuse and then suffering the onset of PTSD afterwards so very interesting. So, hi, Karen. Thanks for being on the show and welcome.
Thank you.
So, Karen, I know you want to talk about kind of your story, your healing story, the road to coming back to healing. But just for any of the listeners that don't know what a narcissistic person is, perhaps you could just run through what that was, what happened.
Yeah. I mean, I'd never experienced sort of, for me, it was emotional abuse and the gaslighting and the manipulation. So it was narcissistic abuse can come in different forms. It can be, you know, forms of physical, emotional, or behavioral. And it's basically if somebody is manipulating you to almost for their own gains and is changing how you view things or feel about things, and basically brings you to the point where you are on your knees, that is abuse. And it doesn't have to be. They say that actually emotional abuse is, and I've had physical abuse as well, but the emotional abuse for me has taken longer to recover from than the physical abuse, because the bruises on the outside, they kind of heal and, you know, you can kind of move on. But the emotional bruises, you spend so long questioning and what is this and what is that, because there were so many lies that were told that you're always just questioning everything, and it does your head in. So you're just left in this constant state of what just happened, what was that all about?
and did this come as more of a surprise to you because of your background and your experience? Is this something that you thought, well, that would never ever happen to me?
I hadn't even heard of the term narcissistic or a narcissist at all. I mean, I'd seen it floating around, and I thought it was just one of those words that people use to be horrible to one another. Oh, they're a narcissist, or, you know. So I'd never really given it any thought. So for me to be part of, I didn't even realize I was, you know, being abused whilst I was in the relationship. I didn't even realize it was only until I came out of the relationship and then did the healing work that I actually realized, God, that was really abusive. And actually, I went to a local women's center who deals specifically with women who have been in abusive relationships, whether they be physical or emotional. And she, one of the therapists, said to me, have you heard of the term narcissism? And I said, no, I've done a kind of a lot of reading up on what's happened, because I'm just left in this shell-shocked place of like, what was that all about? So I said, so I've read some of it, and I've read, you know, people with borderline personality disorder, so, you know, maybe they were that. And she just said, I think you should read up, because it sounds very much, just from what you've told me, just from the few incidents of the things that you've experienced, and I haven't heard all of it, it sounds like, you know, your ex was a narcissist. So I went away and did some of the reading. In fact, I did loads of research. I just videos and books and you name it. And then that was when the light bulbs kind of started to go on, and I was like, oh, okay, you know. And you hear other people's stories, and then you realize that, oh, there's a lot of similarities, and it kind of makes sense, and it sort of helps. But then it's still, you still got all these questions, and it's the questions that just do your head in.
So when you were together, when you were going through it, how long did it take before it went wrong? Did it start off really great and then kind of go wrong, or?
Oh, the red flags were there from day one, but I just plowed straight through, you know, because I'm my role in life, and I've learned this through my own healing, you know, I really believe, like probably you do, that, you know, you're going to keep facing the same situation over and over and over. So the universe is going to present the situation to you over and over until you learn the learnings. And with me, I just ignore all the signs, and like, and then the universe will just hit me with a sledgehammer and say, right, you're going to learn now. You have no choice. So that's what happened basically. And I, what I've looked at through my life, you know, my mum was in a emotionally abusive relationship with my dad, and my role as a small child was the fixer. So hence I've gone through life fixing in my personal life and also in my work life. So with this, with my last relationship, very early on, you know, I came in as the fixer. You know, she, you know, I'd never been out with a woman before, so that was a whole new scenario for me, and I didn't really know what I was doing. So I made allowances and excuses for certain behavior because it was new to me, and or maybe this is how women date, I don't know. Another excuse. And then she moved in with me pretty quick, and that was because apparently she was suicidal. So again, I'm rescuing, and really and truly I should have said, oh, you know, your family needs to step in. But when I said that, it was, oh well, no, you know, I'm the black sheep of the family, this, that and the other. And again, it was another lie, because that all of that wasn't true. But I was like, oh my God, I don't know what to do. And, you know, I love this person. And that heightens your emotions, because then you love this person even more. And then you want to go in and help them and rescue them, because that's what I thought my role was as in life. I'm a rescuer, a helper. So, yeah, so I rescued and I continued throughout that role in the relationship rescuing. And it was that constant roller coaster of, you know, really poor manipulative behavior, and then her never being accountable. And then when she was held accountable, it was, oh, I'm going to go and commit suicide. You know, so
as, as I understand it, this is a common theme with narcissists, that they, it's emotional blackmail, isn't it? If you don't do this, if you don't stay with me, blah, 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 I will just end it all. I'll kill myself, and it'll be your fault.
Yeah. But it was, it's the thing is, if it was so obvious like that, then I don't know. But because I've been in a situation, in a relationship where it was like that, but it wasn't so obvious, you know, it was so discreetly done. And on the other end of the behavior is the future pacing. So that they build this future life with you. Oh, we're going to have this and we're going to have that. So you're hanging on by a thread to this possibility that there's going to be this amazing life with them, and so you allow the rubbish behavior because you know that, oh, it's going to get better, oh, it's going to
once
be okay,
once you fix them.
Once you fix them. And yet, you know, when you sort of said something about, you need to go and sort yourself out, you need to go, there was never anybody that, you know, there was, oh no, I don't want to go to them, I don't trust them, only you can help me. And that puts it all on you. And it's like, oh God, you know, I've now definitely have to fix them because I won't go and see anyone else. So there's all this pressure and guilt. And it's done in such a with her, I mean, she's the only one who I've really experienced that kind of behavior to that extreme. It's done in such a manipulative way that I didn't see it, you know. I mean, looking back now, I can see all the flags. You know, everyone around me could see them all, but I was just like, oh, I'm in love, and this is what you do. If you love someone, you help them, right?
Yeah. So when did you realize, right, I got to get out?
I think I struggled after the first year, and, you know, I kind of was just getting to the point where the behavior was just, it was so poor, and I was exhausted all the time. You know, every 6 weeks it was becoming a bit of a joke that I would come down with a cold or the flu. And, you know, considering what I do for a living, you know, I need to be healthy and I need to be fit. And so all of my clients were like, what do you mean? Like, you're unwell quite a lot. And it was because I was trying to juggle things at home mentally and physically, and then go out and do quite a demanding job mentally and physically. So of course I was feeling. So I was getting worn down, you know, further and further. And with me, once I get to that point where I've lost respect for somebody, I get really resentful and I don't love that person anymore. So it's just guilt that's kind of keeping me there. And then if the behavior gets that bad, I just, you know, there's a point that you just go to, isn't there? And it's like, no, I'm done. Yeah. And I think it was about 2 years in. Yeah. And I just said, you know, no, it was about 18 months. And it was one morning, and there's always a moment, isn't there, where it's like, no, that's it. That's it. And you snap, don't you?
Yeah.
And and I think she'd been out and she'd got home late yet again, drunk. She'd fallen asleep on the sofa, fully clothed. I had to try and wake her up for work, and she wasn't waking up and she was lashing out. And I think she woke up and she was still in a bit of a daze. She woke up and she lashed out and she just missed me. So she, you know, and she'd never hit me before, but that to me was just like, I felt my temper go and I felt myself, oh, I'm going to hit her. And I just thought, no, just right, she's got to go. So I said, you go to work, you don't come back here.
Mm.
And so that for me was like, she needs to get out. But that wasn't the finale, because still being the helper.
I didn't think it would be.
And this is the thing with narcissistic abuse, is that it's that push-pull all the time. Mm. So I thought if I chucked her out and she went back to her mum's, that she might see the light and realize, you know, how badly behaved she'd been, and did it, and that she wanted to sort herself out. And no, that wasn't the case. That was not the case at all. No, she didn't. We still carried on trying to, you know, make it work. And then the final nail in the coffin was she got with one of her best friends and then told me 20 minutes before she put it all over Facebook. And then I then had to see that all unfold on Facebook. And that was where the trauma came from, because it took me a long time, because, you know, seeing, you know, your life then unfold with somebody else just like that was hugely traumatic for me, hugely. And I got triggered for, you know, a good year afterwards, and I was in a really, really bad way. And even then, I still got back with her. got back with her after all that. Oh yeah. So, but then, you know, by that point, I was literally on my knees, and I just thought, this girl is going to kill me. Mm. Literally, she's going, because I was on the edge. I could feel myself just, you know, I'd be going to my mum's house and just lying on the sofa, not being able to do anything, because I was having these panic attacks, and it was just constantly, my heart was, and I'd never experienced anything like that before. And I went to the doctors and they gave me a sedative, diazepam, and they gave me some antidepressants, which I took one or two of, and I took one of the diazepam, and I just thought, this isn't me. You're just going to have to ride this and go cold turkey with whatever it is. But I was in a really bad way, and I had to kind of like cut a lot of people off. I had to block a lot of people, delete a lot of people off Facebook, just to protect myself. Because every time I would see something on Facebook, it would trigger me and trigger all of this stuff that had happened. And the thing was with emotional abuse is that, you know, when you're constantly abused over time, you don't realize how low or how little self-worth you then have. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And to go back twice when someone's treated you appallingly, you know, that goes to show, you know, where your self-worth is, because people are like, why are you so affected? You didn't even want to be with her. And it's like, I have no idea. When someone's treating you that badly, and you can say, well, what do I love about them? I don't know, but I'd still want to be with her. And it just absolutely
kind of really, really got inside your head.
Yeah. I mean, I remember doing a session with you. We did quite a few, didn't we?
We did.
I was just like, and I think when I, you know, when I went through, obviously I went to the doctors and then I went through my own sort of therapies, I was just trying everything and I was reading as much as I could, just because I didn't have any understanding, and I'm such a solution-based person
that
I needed to have answers about what happened and why am I feeling so bad. I mean, I was feeling so bad, and I just remember thinking, is this ever gonna get any better? Am I ever gonna, you know, get to the light? Because a friend of mine said to me, it's like you were in a dark room with this sort of like torch, and you were looking for the exit and just searching everywhere, and there was no exit. But I mean there is an exit, but you just have to be patient.
Yeah.
And for me, patience isn't my greatest thing, and I wanted to feel better. I wanted to feel better, and I wanted to get over, and I wanted to be able to move on. But it just was painful really
it's a
painful.
Healing process, isn't it? And it's also a healing process after a big shock. Because, yeah, you knew, you must have known that eventually the relationship had to end.
Yeah.
But the fact that it ended, kind of she ended it by going off with somebody else rather than you saying, go out of my life.
That
was kind of a shock to your system, which then set off the PTSD, I guess.
Yeah.
And did it help you to actually read and realize that the problem was with her, that she had a condition that potentially isn't actually her fault? It's maybe something she was born with.
Yeah.
Or, you know, an after effect of something that's happened in her life. But did it help to realize that it wasn't actually your fault? The problem was with her and you got sucked into it.
I think now on reflection, it's helped a lot. All of the reading and the research and the understanding that I've got from it. But at the time it did and it didn't, because I still felt so bad. You know, it was just, there was still, I think the biggest thing was, how can someone do that to you? How can someone be so brutal and have zero emotions or zero care in the world? Because it was literally all over Facebook, her undying love for this person. This person stayed in my home on numerous occasions. And then I had people who were joint friends messaging me like, what's going on? You know, are you okay? And it felt like it was just put out there in the tabloids. It was just all over the place. And it was was horrific. And the thing is with narcissists, they will move on very quickly to their next.
I was thinking maybe she could see the end coming. So she had to kind of, as a predator, which I guess is what a narcissist is, she had to find a new victim, and she had to find somebody pretty quickly. Otherwise she'd be left on her own, which she couldn't face. So again, I don't think it was her fault, your fault, or the new person's fault. It's just the way the condition goes, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. And that is how narcissists operate. They will move on to their next victim very quickly, and then they will love bomb them. And then they will then, obviously things, you know, after a certain amount of time, you can't stay in that love bombing stage. And so then what will happen is that they will then try to come back to you and hoover you up. And so I'd done all this, and I kind of knew that that would happen, and it did happen. She did come back and try to hoover me up, and I just ignored it because I knew it was, I was like, oh, there you go. There you go. So that was kind of a relief, but it was still, I just remember it being so painful that I just thought, you know, is it ever going to end? Is this pain and this just constant questioning, and especially when your self-worth is in the gutter, you're always going to be questioning yourself anyway. And as an empath, because narcissists are attracted purely to empaths, as an empath, you're always looking at yourself. You're always looking at, oh, what could I have done better? Or what do I need to change? Is it me? Am I not good enough? Am I too old? Am I too ugly? So you're always going to be questioning yourself anyway. And, you know, looking at, well, what do I need to do next time so that doesn't happen again? But I think, you know, now I've certainly got to the point where definitely at peace with it all, you know, and it's taken a long time to get there. But it's also, I was really fortunate enough at the beginning of, it must have been about 7 or 8 months ago. I do some voluntary work at the local homeless place, and I've been there for about 8 months, and one of the girls who's the director there, she said, oh, Karen, I need to tell you something. She said, one of your exes is working in the centre. And I was like, oh, my God, are you for real? But I remember, how's this for you? I remember saying to the universe, I'd really love to have a chat with one of her exes, just so that I know that I'm not going crazy.
Ah, there you go,
And I didn't think it would be this one, because this was the one, according to my ex, who was the worst of them all, who was, you know, all kinds of stuff she says she did. So anyway, I met up with her, and even though it was painful to hear some of the stuff that she told me, I was like, oh God, it's the same pattern. She said, you lived the same life that I did, and I watched it happen, because what she did to you, she did to me, and then she come back to me, and then she went back to you. She just said, so it just made me feel a lot better, but it was painful, but it was, oh, okay, it's definitely not me. And I remember saying to her, how long is it going to take me to feel like this? She said, Karen, it took me 3 years to get over her.
Right.
I was like, it's not going to take me that long. So yeah, but that was really interesting to find out, you know, again, to give me that peace of mind that it wasn't me and I wasn't going crazy, because, you know, you are driven to, you know, insanity. Mm. And you behave in ways that you'd never think that you'd behave, ever. Just because, you know, women that end up in abusive relationships and she ended up killing her husband or whatever. You know, I'm not saying in all cases, but in most of the cases, because they're emotionally beaten down so much, you can do all kinds of extreme things.
I remember from my own experiences years and years ago, I mean, this would be, well, probably about, well, over 20 years ago, probably about 20, maybe 30 years ago, I can't remember now, but when I was with my ex-husband, and I remember standing in a corner of the kitchen where the cabinets meet the corner part, and I could see a knife on the table and it was just out of reach. And I remember thinking to myself, because he was standing in front of me, pointing his finger, waving and shouting. And I thought, if I can reach that knife, this will all be over. And now I think back now, my God, what if I had reached it? I could have killed him. But you do think like that. It's kind of, I guess it's your mind's way of trying to get out of that situation. It's a defensive move, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, there was a time when, so this was when I, just before I got back the second time, and I was in a local pub and there was a music festival, and she was with this person that she eventually that has got back with. And, you know, obviously it'd been all over Facebook and what have you, that they were together and da-da-da, this and the other. And she knew that I was in this pub, but again, using her manipulative behavior, came down despite knowing all I was there, and I've been there all day drinking, what have you, but she still decided to come down. And so I just obviously ignored her for the whole evening, and she still stayed there. And then she left, and then she decided to come back on her own to say hello to me right at the end of the evening. And then so she kind of walked past and said, hi Karen, I just thought I'd say hello. And I just thought, she's been in there 4 hours and now you're coming to say hello to me, for what purpose? And then she went off into the toilet, and that for me was, that again triggered me, and I was fuming. I just saw red and I went storming into the toilets, and I'm really ashamed of this behavior because it's not within my nature to be like this. But because of the abuse that I'd gone through, that for me was the tipping point. And I remember going into this and I was banging on the doors, come out here. Anyway, she came out, she's like, calm down. She came out, and then I literally rammed her up against the wall, and I was going, why are you doing this to me? Why are you doing this? And then some people came in and they're like, what are you doing? And I was just like, I don't know. She's just driving me crazy. And so, and then yet again, she came back here and then manipulated things, and just horrible situation. Mm. Horrible, horrible. So it can drive you to do things that you would never have done. And I've never been violent. I've never, you know, been like that with anybody in any past relationships. I've never had that level of toxicity. Mm. So, you know, it does, because there was times where I think, well, maybe I'm the narcissist. I remember thinking, maybe I am, you know, maybe they're the end. And I was just thinking, no, because for you to even question yourself, to even look at yourself, a narcissist would never look at their behavior, would never take any accountability or responsibility for their behavior, not in a million years. And that, for me, someone who's got no emotions and doesn't take any accountability, that for me are signs of narcissistic behavior.
Yeah. So where are you now? Would you say you're well over it, or?
I'd probably say I'm about 80% there. There's still a little bit to go, but God, I'm in such a better place than what I was. You know, I think back a year ago, I was still struggling. But
so how have you got from there to here then? What's the process?
I know. So last year, obviously lockdown happened, but just before lockdown, I remember saying to a friend of mine, I don't know what's going to happen this year, and I'd watched this race. I watched a woman doing some sort of adventure across the sea on a yacht to break some sort of record. And I was so inspired by it. I remember saying to my friend the next day, I don't know what it is, but I've got a feeling I'm going to do something with water and it's going to be something big. And I don't know what it is, but I don't know. I have no idea, but that's what I've got this feeling. Anyway, literally June comes and I decide to buy a paddle board. I had one lesson in October, right? And in June, in the middle of lockdown, I decided to buy a paddle board. No idea what I was buying, didn't belong to any groups, didn't know anybody who had a paddle board. And I just kind of thought, I need to do something. If we're going to be in lockdown, I need to do something that's going to keep me sane. And so I bought this paddle board. No idea what I was doing. And then I took it to this local lagoon and they sort of said, oh, yeah, you just pay a certain amount of money, you can just use the lagoon. Anyway, I pumped this board up. And as I'd taken the hose out, it's gone down. Pumped it up again, taken it out, it's gone down. Everyone else is going out on their boards and there's me trying to work out what's going on with this board. Anyway, I finally got it pumped up and I went out on the board. And I didn't have the best of times because I was on my own and everyone was in couples. And when you're in a really crap place, right, all of a sudden, all you ever see is lovey-dovey couples. And you're like, just get away from me. Don't want to see you happy. No one's allowed to be happy. I just want to stay in my horrible place. And so I didn't really speak to anybody and everybody looked like experts in my head. This is all in my head. They're all better than me because I had little self-worth. They're all better than me. I don't know what I'm doing. No one's ever going to want to talk to me. Anyway, so I didn't have the best of times and I actually came home and cried. I just thought, what have you done? You've just spent £600 on a board and you've got no friends who do it. And you don't even know what you're doing. You can't even pump the board up, let alone get on it. So then I'm not one to be defeated. So I thought, right, I need to join some groups. So I joined a Facebook group and got talking to people in there, telling them, you know, where do I go? What do I do? And then a girl locally here said, why don't you come out with us? We're part of this club that meets on the Thames. Why don't you come out with us? And so literally I met up with her and went out for my first paddle. And even on that paddle, it went wrong. I got mowed down by some rowers. And then after that, I just started going out more and more with them and, you know, become quite involved with the club. And then, just literally decided I had a really good summer despite being locked down. I just was out on my board all the time, meeting different people and getting out on the water as much as possible. And that's kind of was like my therapy. And it gave me the space just to not think about it, you know, because when you live alone and, you know, I didn't have any kids as a distraction, just had my dog. That's the only thing that's the only noise that was going round and round in my head was just that situation, that relationship and their life.
Like and replaying it,
And how magical their life is going to be now and mine is this, that and the other. So it's like a stuck record and it just goes around and around. So by me having this distraction enabled me the time and I guess the space to be able to heal and just allow what needed to happen. With all healing, it's a process and you can't rush that process. And I was trying so desperately to rush it along that it just was like, no, you are going to stay there until you need to.
Yeah.
So from then I just literally, I decided that I loved paddleboarding so much that I wanted to race. So I bought a race board in the November last year. And then since then I've been race training. So it's just opened up a whole new world for me. It's not attached to any of my past. They're all new people that don't know anything about, you know, any of that. And I've not had to talk about it, which was great. And it's just allowed me the time and the space to be able to heal, do the work that I've needed to do the learning that I've needed to do and just breathe, you know, because it is uncomfortable. I also, you know, doing voluntary work really helped as well. Like working at the homeless charity and, you know, Lisa there, she's one of the directors and she's just lovely. I was, when I first went there, she actually contacted me and, you know, I really do believe in the law of attraction and And she kind of contacted me, just picked up the phone and was like, I really love the stuff that you do. You know, how do you feel about coming and helping out at the center? And I was like, oh my God, I don't know. She said, okay. Let's get you in. Okay. So as much as it, I was giving to them, they were like a life raft as well. Yeah. As well as my paddleboard was my life raft that kept me afloat. So was, you know, the Sutton Night Watch, kind of like giving to others and takes away the emphasis on yeah. your stuff. And it yeah. really does help a lot.
Brilliant. So,
yeah. So, you know, I'm in a much better place than what I was. I didn't end up taking any kind of medications to, you know, I don't like taking meds anyway. No. And I just thought, I just need to be able to feel what it is that I'm feeling and know that it will get better. And I just remember saying to myself every day, just all you got to do today is just breathe. That's your one job. Just get up and breathe. And whenever I used to have, you know, panic attacks, so I used to do some tapping to calm it down, and I do meditation and stuff like that. And it does take the edge off for sure. But I was just grasping at everything, you know, and I was just grasping, trying everything. I mean, I even went to the Buddhist center for about 3 months. I mean, in the monk, I remember coloring the monk, and I was just like, because we were doing some meditation and it was about forgiveness. And he was like, right, bring the person into your mind's eye that you want to forgive. And I was like, well, I can't forgive that person, so let's just switch that away. And then another person would come in attached to that person. I was like, well, I'm definitely not forgiving them. So
I was going to move on.
This library of people where I was in such an angry place. And I just remember sitting there getting really agitated. And I was like, well, it's not working. And so after he'd finished, I collared him and I just said, it's not working. And I'm really, really struggling. So he said, all right, okay, well, I'm going to give you this mantra. And so he gave me this mantra to chant, which did help. And I did it with the beads. And, you know, I guess you just, for me, it's just try everything and see what works, you know, because there will be something worse. But I think most importantly, it's time. And, you know, is a great healer. But to give yourself a break from it, you need a distraction to keep yourself busy, a healthy distraction, you know. Don't go and bounce into another relationship, because there's no learnings there for you. You know, you need to take the time out, get involved in something that's healthy, that's going to make your, it's going to make you feel good and give you back your self-worth. So for me, in the paddleboarding, it's hugely boosted my confidence in a huge way. And it's something that is mine. No one can take it away from me. I've built up my own community through it now, and I feel really confident. I'm helping others now. I'll probably go on to do instructing and stuff like that. But it's, you've got to do something that's gonna, you know, build your self-worth back up again, because fundamentally that's the thing that's gone. Mm-hmm. And if you don't build it back up, you'll go and attract someone else that is going to treat you the same way. And I for sure that was not going to happen for me. I just said, I don't need to be finding anyone else until it's the right time, you know.
Yeah.
And when it's the right time, it'll happen. But
yeah,
for now, it's just about getting to know me again and the things that I liked. Because I remember in that relationship saying to myself, I mean, God, how ridiculous is this? Oh, it's not about me anymore. I've had my time. It's about her. Let's help her.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, who says that? That's crazy. Who says that? You know, putting your dreams and your, and that wasn't from her telling me to do that. That was me saying that. So,
yeah, it does. It resonates with a guest I had on a few weeks ago, Sophia, whose marriage broke down. She, when she found out her husband was having an affair just after they'd got married. And she picked up belly dancing because she'd always loved to dance. So she learned to belly dance. And got really good at it. Yeah, and she was saying more or less the same thing, that all the stuff that she loved to do and her career as well, she'd put it on hold, and she doesn't think she would have got as far as she's got today had she still been married. So, yeah.
Oh, totally. There was no way that, because I remember when I was working, you know, she would make me feel bad. Oh, you're always working. Well, yeah, I'm self-employed. So, and I was quite new into my business at that point. I was only 2 years in. So yeah, I am going to have to work quite hard, because this is what pays my mortgage. I don't have a sideline. I'm not employed. I'm self-employed. But so then, you know, I thought, okay, well, maybe I should give up my Monday classes. And then, you know, but then that wasn't good enough, because she would still go out and get drunk and do what she wanted to do anyway. So it's like, what's the point? I'm still sitting here alone. I could be working. Yeah. But you do, you definitely put your needs behind other people's. And I think as an empath, you've got to watch that for sure. Yeah. And make sure that that doesn't. And it feels really uncomfortable to put yourself first. It's like, ooh, and to be in a relationship where somebody's, where it's 50-50, for me, it feels quite foreign. So I have to, what I'm doing now is I look at relationships around me, people that I know that are in healthy relationships, and I look at the dynamics and I see, okay, that's what it's supposed to look like.
Yeah.
Oh, that's healthy. Oh, that's how it works. Because before, I was just like, this can't be right. You know, this can't. And I used to say to people, how do you manage that at home? And they're like, oh, we're just kind of mucking. I was like, but I'm doing all the work. And that's another thing, you know, with a narcissist, is that they will just leave you to do everything. You know, I was the cleaner. I was like the person who sorted out all the bills, you know, and it's just relentless and you're just exhausted. They just swan in and out, in and out.
Yeah. Oh, bless you. Well, if anybody is listening and wants to get in touch with you, what's the best way of getting in contact with you?
Through Facebook or Instagram.
Okay.
I'm on Facebook as Karen Savage Epic Mind and Fitness. And then I think it's the same on Instagram. And then I've got my paddleboarding. So it's kind of like my personal account on Instagram. And I call that, what do I call it now? It is, from sink to sup. So paddleboarding is stand-up paddleboarding. So it's kind of like my little metaphor, because I really was sinking, and, you know, my paddleboard was the thing that helped me stay afloat. So sink, and then the number two, sup, S-U-P. And that's kind of like just telling a bit of my story of really about sort of how I started paddleboarding and how it's helped me with, you know, it was, you know, PTSD that I did have. I've never experienced anything like that before. The triggers that come with PTSD are very real. I mean, mine weren't as bad as what, you know, other people have experienced. You know, I mean, they, you know, veterans especially, you know, some of the triggers are horrendous. But really, I think, you know what, it's really made me much more, in our line of work, it's made me much more empathetic and compassionate and understanding towards people who do have serious trauma. And that's why I love working with people who have trauma, because I can really relate to it. Yeah. And I know what it's like because I've been there. And even though mine wasn't anything, and again, here you go, look, self-worth, mine wasn't as bad. But it was, for me, it was still trauma, and I still got triggered hugely. And it's just the worst place to ever be. And when you get triggered, it's like you're going into this dark hole.
Yeah.
And you're going over the top and you can feel yourself falling, and there's nothing you can do. And then when you get to the bottom of the hole, it's like, right, how long am I going to be down here for? And it's like, right, how can I? And then it's the climbing back out, which is really hard work, you know.
But eventually you do get back to the light. Yeah, don't you? Eventually.
And eventually the triggers don't, you know, for me, the triggers aren't, I don't get triggered as much as I used to. Yeah. I'm still have to protect myself with certain things, but they're not nowhere. I mean, someone would have to say her name and I'd start, you know, having like palpitations, because I'd be frightened of what's going to be said that could hurt me, you know. It, and you associate that person or that name with pain, and that's the association. So it's
almost like a torture, isn't it? Like
crazy.
Like a torture. Okay. Well,
but it does get better, and you know, it's time. So if anybody is going through that, I mean, some people come out of narcissistic relationships and they're fine. It just all depends on you as a person, and when you know, I guess when you receive the worst of the abuse. It just is, you know, a number of different factors. But if anybody is going out there, is out there listening, that's going through it, all I would say is it does get better. And the best thing you can possibly do to help yourself is, if you don't have kids with that person, is just to block them on everything. Do not reply, because they will come back and try to hoover you up without a shadow of a doubt. Absolutely. And the best thing you can do is protect yourself until you're in a position 2 years down the line to be able to be like, oh, okay, I see what that was about. And just, you know, and if that means you have to block certain other people and cut other, that's you've got to do what you've got to do to
protect yourself.
Absolutely. And there's, you know, people will understand that, and if they don't, then that's tough. You know, it's about you and your healing, and you'll attract the right people. So just focus on you and make sure that you're doing as best you can practically to be able to, you know, go through the healing, which can take time.
Okay.
But they get there. They will get there.
Yeah. Yeah. There's always a light at the end of the tunnel, as we say.
Absolutely.
Brilliant. Well, thank you so much for coming in and telling your story. It's been really interesting and lovely to see that you're looking so much better. And I wish you all the best for the future. And thank you for being here. So, take care of yourself.
Thank you for doing these podcasts. They're really good. And I think it's good to get stuff out there for people to hear, you know, and to share stories.
Definitely.
Because I think, you know, there's a lot of doom and gloom out there, but also if there's some lightness at the end, it does give you hope. You know, when I did all of my kind of like reading and researching, I wanted to desperately know that I would be okay, and to hear, you know, that, because there's a lot of people out there that are still in the angry phase, and it's like, I don't want to be in that angry phase. I want to just be in the peace phase and be okay with everything, which I am. I don't, you know, there's no blame anywhere now. It is what it is, and I'm all right, you know. So there is, you will get there. And I think thank you to you to sharing and highlighting these things, because it's needs to be out there.
I love doing it. I love listening to other people's stories, and I'm meeting some absolutely brilliant people along the way. And also I'm hearing that some of my stories that have gone out, other people are getting in touch with them, so they're getting a response. But some of the guests I've had on are getting in touch with other guests I've had on, and they're talking to each other, so kind of building up a little community. So it's really nice.
That's really nice, especially, you know, empowering one another. And you know, that's the thing with any kind of anything that happens in life, I think there has to be, you know, a reason and a good side to it, you know. Make this be a positive rather than a negative, which is, you know, what. And it's funny, because when you first asked me, I was like, yeah, because I'd never want to say no to anything, and you know, and you've helped me in the past, so I didn't want to say no. But then I thought about it, and I just thought, oh no, what if I'm not good enough? what if no one believes me? What if people think that I'm lying? And I just, and then I just thought, you know what? And I spoke to, you know, Dale. I spoke to Dale about it.
Yeah.
She just said, really? And I just said, yeah. She goes, why wouldn't people believe you? And I just said, I don't know. Just, you know, because it's not physical, is it? And she's like, you still need to work on that self-worth, don't you? And it's like, yeah. So I thought, I'm not going to think about it.
Still a bit more work to be done there.
Yeah, totally, right? But I just thought, no, you know what? I am going to share it, because it's real. It happened to me. Yeah. And if one person can relate to it, then that's all good. You know,
brilliant. Yeah, good. I'm sure people will have got a lot of value out of it. So, yeah. So once again, thanks for sharing your story, and I'll say goodbye.
Thank you.
Well, I hope you enjoyed listening to today's story. And as always, if you want to ensure you don't miss any future episodes, then please subscribe. And if you yourself have a story to tell, then please do get in touch with me. I'd love to hear from you. And until next week, take care of yourself, stay safe, and I will see you soon. Goodbye.